The whole thing acting asking you to make things valueless. It feels a little difficult practically. If I know that body is a perishable object, then still the investment in body or the desire to invest in body was creating that like a rupture in the mind.
It's like it's telling you to see what is valuable and what is valueless. And we conclude that to the extreme that we have to relinquish everything valueless and become like a hermit. So it's not like even letting to see what is value and what is valueless.
I don't think it says make it valueless. It may say something like, see that it has no value. You believe that something has value, they are asking you to throw it away. Jesus is saying, see that it has no value. There is no question of throwing it away. It has no value. What's the throw? It's a seeing, it's a kind of a seeing. The ego uses this whole concept of body, beauty, all of it, so self-punishment. What do you think it's being used for? The only value it has is to give you self-punishment. Which means you value self-punishment. You're not valuing beauty and body, you're valuing self-punishment. That's what you're fighting to keep. You can see Jesus asking you to give up all this. Why should I give up all this? What you're saying is, why should I give up punishing myself? I want to keep punishing myself. It is a false belief that playing this game of beauty and perfect body gives great joy. But if we examine it properly, we find there's no joy there.
I feel sometimes that the whole attachment to the body is like some memories like replaying over and over again in my mind.
So there's a fantasy of reward. Whether it's coming from memory, or whether you're imagining it even now, there's a fantasy of reward. If I have a perfect body, I will get such and such reward. Right?
Yeah.
But in waiting for that reward, you see that you're suffering every day. The reward may or may not come. The attachment is not to body. Attachment is the ego's plan for salvation. The ego believes suffering will set me free. And body is the best way to suffer. Body is the ultimate suffering machine. Every hair, every wrinkle, every pimple, every cold, cuff, everything. Ear pain, woe pain. Have generosity. Yeah, the ego actually hates the body. The ego is disgusted by the body. The ego plays both ways. We don't, as a civilized society, we don't realize how much effort we put in to cover up the disgust we have for this body. If you see all the holes of the body, they all have dirty things coming out, according to the ego. Whether it's the ears or the nose or the mouth or any of the, everywhere there is some crap coming out and we have to hide that. No one can see that. Right? Even some skin may say. Kachrai nikalta hai. So this body is like a foul, disgusting thing. And we spend hours and hours making it presentable. So we know it is disgusting. Okay.
I can see that days when I have little awareness and I'm looking at myself in the mirror. You know, when I stare at myself, I feel I'm looking at something which is so transient.
It is nothing. It is not transient, it is not good, it is not bad, you're seeing nothing. There is nothing there. Everything is put by the ego, all levels. Even this disgusting is an ego level. So, I am so beautiful is an ego level, I am so horrible is an ego level. And it's always fighting to try and take it on the other side of the spectrum. It should hide the fact that it is ugly and disgusting, which is the ego's whole story anyway. The ego itself feels it is ugly and disgusting. And all the time is covering it up. So the body is symbolic of the ego itself.
It's like the same day you look at a mirror and you see, you are good. And within few seconds you come and look and say, what's this?
So it's all perception, right? Perception is a choice. There's no fact in any perception. Then there's this interesting perception of how we perceive others, you know. That if somebody is beautiful, they seem to be divine somehow. You know, it's a goddess. You know, it's a Greek goddess. Look at his body. And goddess, god, goddess. Somehow they seem to be closer to God. And when we look at ugly, disfigured people, no, we feel they are far from God. God has punished them. And we don't want to go near them. Again? What's a poor woman? Beauty ki taraf bhagna, ugliness se poor bhagna. So when we see a beautiful person, we believe that they have something I don't have. They have some divinity, they have some godliness, something is hidden there. And I need to capture that. That's what we call falling in love. You see something divine in that particular body. But only you are seeing that. Your neighbor will not see that. That's the best part. So you project something divine on a body. Somebody, then you say, I'm in love with that body. Then you marry that body, or you fall in love, or you have sex, and you want to get that. What do they have which I don't have? Okay? And after a while you find, no, after a while you find you didn't get anything. There's nothing there. It's flat. Then you feel cheated. And you say, why did I get into a relationship? Then go hunting for the next one to project divinity on. He's got what I'm missing. That's the story. Because if I had the same qualities, it's okay. I don't need to capture you. I already have, right? A rich man doesn't try and capture another rich man. I already have money. But a poor person, when he finds a rich person, immediately catches. You have something I don't have. That's the key to the love game. You have something I don't have. It's a bluff. That's a projection. And then you make plans how to achieve that. And sexuality plays a big role in that. That if I can have sex with this particular body which I have given ascension status, if I can just have sex and, you know, grab the essence of it, or maybe I'll get something valuable. You keep trying that. Still, you end up with nothing.
I think there's also a desire to capture and make that divinity become very weak and small. Like that whole shining personality. What you see, you want to like capture it, and you want to tarnish it.
If I don't have it, even you can't have it. If I don't have the innocence and the divinity, why should you have it? So then there's that other desire to destroy it also. So, your thing. So when you fall in love, you don't notice all this. You believe your projection. Without projection, you can't fall in love. Not possible.
But there is always, people say that he is blessed, he has a good body and has a charm and stuff. And the other side, they say that they are like cursed, so they are like crippled and
yeah.
So it's...
Yeah, that is the ego's distinction. But.
Mm. Yeah.
That is the ego's distinction. It doesn't have to be true. Having worked with many people in the glamour business or in the film business, I know that beautiful women or men are often in worse state than normal women. Right? You think, you believe that being looking like a goddess will make your life amazing. Because you have everything. But how would you feel if lakhs and lakhs of people just want to sleep with you? And when they can't sleep with you, lakhs and lakhs of people fantasize about sleeping with you. What do you think that does to you? And that's all they want from you, nothing else. And every actor they work with, every director they work with, every producer they work with wants that body. I think they're in a strange kind of hell. It would be better to be ordinary looking and be left alone. Maybe you could do some sadhana and you could walk your path without so many people, you know, running towards you. Why would you want that? But ego is always upside down, so it perceives, you know, heaven as hell.
It somehow gets into spiritual philosophy. We see that as perfection. So in spirituality, if I do sadhana and become peaceful, and so I might look different and I might look like there is an unconscious or vested interest that if I do or walk the path, my body might change according to it.
Yeah, but why should it change? And change for what?
Because we see it as perfection. What we have now is not perfect.
But can the body be perfect? Can a dying imaginary thing be made perfect? How can you make a... First of all, it's holographic. It's anyway changing every day. It has been programmed to age and whatever it does. How do you make this thing perfect? And what would be the point of it? Why would you make it perfect? I'm not saying don't make it, I'm just asking why would you make it perfect? To do what? Just impress others? To get people attracted to you?
Or say that your sadhana is reflecting.
So one is seeking approval through the body.
Yeah.
One is trying to become an idol so that people worship you as an idol.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere we have equated the whole image, the bodily image, with progress of spirituality.
Body is proof of your spirituality? Nice one.
It seems like some flawed belief.
The flawed belief is that we are always creating Chinese versions of the truth. So our true spirituality is somewhere else. My kingdom is not of this world. We will create a false version, which is this body, the ego creates and tries to create this image. It's not just the body, it's everything. It's the way we speak and all of that. They're trying to make the personality spiritual. That's the Chinese version. That's not the real version. The real spirituality is beyond the body. Now the body spontaneously as it surrenders to the presence, it will reflect the presence. The body gets its own kind of beauty, but that's not nowhere the kind of beauty that the world calls beauty. The world calls something else beauty. Ramana is beautiful. But that's nowhere the world's definition of beauty. It may take a very special kind of eye to even see that beauty. Tiger Shroff's beauty, everybody can see. So that's the Chinese version. And that's the version that creates terror. So we're always in fear. Because it is brittle.
Yeah.
It is changeable. One COVID attack and boom. Right?
I like what you're saying, that you can feel the presence, even like the so-called appearance of the body, you can feel through it.
But to some people with certain kind of eyes, right? Not to everyone.
And I think in that sense, I'm not saying that should be the goal or the destination, but...
It can't be the goal.
Yeah,
there's no way you can attain that.
Yeah.
It is a byproduct of something else. Right? So you have to get the main item first. But we waste time trying to create this spiritual persona.
Mm-hmm.
And the main product gets forgotten.
And the whole, the undertone is like the one that you said only, the desire to attract people.
Yeah. I'll tell you one example.
Mm-hmm.
Losing hair. Many months, yes. So once, couple of years ago, he was considering, should I get a transplant? He asking me, I said, how much will it cost?
Mm-hmm.
50k.
Yeah.
I said, do it. I don't have an issue with this. For me, the problem is not whether you get a hair transplant or not. For me, the thing is, don't waste your mind time on that. It's irrelevant whether you get a transplant or whatever you do. You know, it doesn't matter. It's cool. It's all cool. Just don't let it eat up your consciousness. Don't get obsessed with the damn thing. So when you're doing it and not wanting to do it and doing it, and that's the ego play. That's the nonsense. Otherwise, you want to eat an ice cream? Go and eat the damn ice cream. You want to have sex? Go and have sex. Be done with the damn thing. Don't think about it. Because no event means anything. What does that event mean? It actually means nothing. Because it has no judgment on it. It is just simple, like you took a bath, you did this, you did, you moved on. It meant nothing. Because it means nothing. Capital none. Underline none. Bold italics. None of this. None. If none of this is real, then why are we segregating items? We are doing the segregation all the time. What is good, what is bad?
Yeah.
Yeah? Which actions are okay, which actions are like not okay, which are very terrible, which are very spiritual. Jesus says none of this is real. So your segregation itself is a waste, finally. At a higher level. Then we do segregation of thoughts. It's called ordering of thoughts. Which thoughts are good? Which are bad? Which are ugly? Like jealousy thought? Oh my god. Sexual thought? Oh my god. Thoughts of power? Thoughts of... all that bad thoughts. So there's this constant segregation of thoughts, ordering of thoughts going around.
Repulse,
thought
in your
head. That's the battlefield. What if none of the thoughts meant anything? What if the Son of God or your true nature or the pure consciousness is not bothered by any of the thoughts? Yeah. Which is why, I mean, I think also I used to say this also. He says that if you, and he was not talking about himself, he said if you meet an awakened person in his normal life, not when he's on stage talking, in his normal life, you will not recognize him. Because he may do exactly what you're doing. If you wanted to color your hair, that guy might color his hair. And you look at that, he's coloring his hair and say, he's bad.
Yeah.
And for him, it may mean nothing. He's coloring his hair. He felt like he did it so much. It means nothing. He's still happy. So how do you recognize a person? Because we recognize them from their actions. How is he behaving? Like, is he living like a very beggar? He should live like a beggar. Then we'll call him a saint.
Yeah, a renounced life.
Yeah. How do you know what renunciation looks like? Where does renunciation even take place and how do you see it? What if you could be a king in a castle and be completely renounced? Renunciation is the understanding that there is no way to capture anything here in this dream. You can't own anything here. That's renunciation. The error you were making in the start is the statement implied that Jesus is asking you to give up something of value. But the fact that it has value is decided by your mind. First you say it has value. Then you say Jesus is asking you to give up that thing. But does that thing have value as the question? And the one who is saying all this, is he reliable? The one who has decided that money is extremely valuable, who is saying this? And is the ego reliable? The ego says clothes are valuable and body is valuable and six pack is valuable and a fixed job is valuable and insurance policies are valuable and having contacts in government is valuable and so many things are valuable. And who is saying all this? The scared little ego. Jesus will question that and say, and ask you to see if any of that is true. The value is only in perception. What you may find valuable, what I may find valuable, what my gardener may find valuable, maybe three completely different things. How do you now decide whose value is correct? My gardener is obsessed with weeds. There's an obsession with weeds in the garden. So no matter what beauty is happening there, he can only see the weeds are grown up. Yeah. So for him, the value is if this particular patch of garden has no weeds, then it's like, wow. Right? No, I don't give a damn. Sometimes he and Amit, we laugh at that. What the hell are these guys obsessed with weeds so much? They just see that. They see that layer. That's the power of individual perception. We live in different worlds. The whole game of value, valuable, valueless, it starts once we believe I'm a body. Before that, it can't even start. Valuable to whom? To this particular person, right? To this person, a job may be valuable, but again, now you're referring to this body. To the spirit that you are, what does it care about job? So first we believe we are a body, a person, and then each person has his peculiar set of values. Of course, there is a common palette on this manifestation from which we choose. There is a certain range. Like money is valuable, job is valuable, relationship, whatever. There's this buffet to choose from. You can't go out of it. This ordering of thoughts is very interesting, but it's a deep conversation.
Yes. It's not recognized, you know, like while you're telling it's making sense, because there are like acceptable thoughts and then there are not acceptable thoughts in your mind, and that becomes the battlefield.
Yeah. And acceptable sensations, non-acceptable sensations, which is pain and pleasure. Right? All the time the body is being scanned. So pleasure is acceptable and I want more of that. Pain is not acceptable and I want less of that. The same thing is carried into the mind. Pleasant thoughts, spiritual thoughts. Acceptable. Jealousy, anger, sex thoughts. Contradictory thoughts, I am a fraud thoughts, not wanted. What would happen if you lost interest in ordering your thoughts? Just think. Just feel that. And if you lost interest in ordering your thoughts, where all thoughts meant nothing. No thought meant anything. Everything is just gibberish floating there. It means nothing. Or take another example. Maybe you're seeing a dream in the night, and in the dream you're thinking. So what value do those thoughts in the dream have? Finally. Nothing. So what happens if you stop bothering with the thought? Then suddenly presence becomes possible. The true nature becomes visible. Because you got out of that obsession, you kind of snapped out of a dream, or snapped out of an obsessive habit. Suddenly you are just aware, you are in awareness. If we are ordering thoughts, then we are compressed. We live in this tiny area called the head. And all the time we are rotating, many circles there, chasing our own tail, fighting our own thoughts. It's like a constant battle. So who's fighting the who?
That before there were unconscious, a thought comes, you catch them unconsciously, you do things.
Mm.
Then after that, when you are in this path, then you have brought awareness to the thoughts. But with awareness, you have got judgment also.
So what if even that is a desired experience? What if we love creating those thoughts?
Hmm.
So that we can jump on them, and we'll fight for a few hours, and for those few hours, spirit is forgotten. So what if that is also our game? It's not happening by accident. We believe we are victims of our mind, don't we? What if you are not a victim of the mind?
What if the thoughts are my creation? Because there is so much of rapidity in that. Rapidly what thoughts, it's a good thought and a bad thought.
Most religious books, most paths say thoughts are not your creation. Only Akim says, only Jesus says. No. Even there, your core desire will facilitate a certain kind of thought. The core desire here is our desire to fight in the head. We want that fight. As we give up the desire to fight, those thoughts have no meaning anymore. So even if they come, it's nothing. You don't want to fight now. All our resistance to salvation shows up in different ways. Right? And they are complex mechanisms. Maneuvers. But finally it is this only. Yeah, we rukna. Badmade.
And when I'm narrating the story, the narrator will be says that I will get everything from my past,
yes,
make it look like I am a thorough victim,
yes,
and I will not move one inch ahead of
you. resistance is a beautiful subject to dab on. All the different ways in which we resist. Hold on to that.
So that's what they say, the two parts. One is victim has this suppressed anger to it, and the rebel is the other side.
Don't angry.
Don't angry. One is like I want.
One is sad angry. One is angry angry.
Yes. So the resistance can be in two ways.
Both are defenses to your true nature. You know, there is a belief, you might believe that when you come here, you resist me. It has nothing to do with reality. You are always going to resist your true nature. The ego, till it can, it will resist true nature. Not be who you really are. You don't want to be really you. You want to be this funny person, imaginary person, in a constant state of conflict. Like a seesaw. Victim rebel, victim rebel, victim rebel. In the whole game, victim rebel, its thought forms playing so amazingly. It's like a full movie going on here. And in that movie, theme is victim and authority problem and slave conscious and dude, who's saying all that? Who's saying all this? You see? Self-hypnosis? Then you won't do that
anymore. Which kind of seems like I would say a soft story. Anyone who sort of contradicts that in any sense, even if it's a teacher,
yes,
or a wife, or a husband, or a friend,
yes,
I cannot accept it.
Yes.
I will make sure that I will rebel in that moment.
You want the teacher also to buy your story.
Yeah.
And that's where all teacher-student conflicts happen. The teacher will never buy your story. He's always going to dismiss it. No matter how much you try and justify your stories. Yeah, but some stories are so precious and we have kind of, you know, watered them from so long, they become like beautiful trees now for us. So when those stories get hit, then you counterattack. Or you shut down. One of the two. So that the sun can shut down and you counterattack. But what is the fight about? It's just a story. You are defending a belief system. Come to the teacher to dissolve all your belief systems. And you end up fighting for your belief system only. There is no victim, there is no rebel. Both are imaginary. You believe any of that. If you protect your story, you will waste your time. There is no story worth protecting. If stillness is what we want, no story is worth protecting. Ask the ego where it feels maximum danger. In the presence of spirit. Even afraid of spirit. Any teacher who is embodying that space is going to be this alertness, you know. The ego is alert there. But as we mature, we allow the ego to get exposed. And not only that, we enjoy its exposure. We enjoy, one more layer is revealed, one more onion, I got a layer peel on it. Right? When we are not sane, not thinking right, we defend it. We fight for it. interesting, this desire to have an identity in the first place. Why would we even want to have a human identity? Right? Whatever you call sharing or whatever you call being, it's an identity. All the attack defense is happening on the basis of that identity. Why would you want that in the first place? Why would you not just be space? Kya sona chandi bhara hai usme identity, kachra hi bhara hai, kachra apne paas, and kuch nahi. But that identity itself is scared. Why is it scared? Because it knows it has no existence. It's like smoke, it's flimsy. Because it's flimsy, it's always terrified. Right? The course says nothing real can be threatened. So if something is feeling threatened, you should straight away understand that what is feeling threatened is not real. And we should let it crash. Right? Whatever is feeling threatened cannot be real. Then you expose that which is feeling threatened and dissolve, let it go. Rather than protecting, defending, hiding, and then extending everything, making things drag so much.
This whole identity thing that you're talking about feels like it is, you know, built on some pillars of stories that I say about sharing. Like there are like patent stories, you know, around it. Or most stories ko agar teacher ne agar wo pillar ko kaatne ki koshish ki to almost like the whole identity is very shaking in
us. Yet, as you know, all the pillars are fake. Exist only in your head as a thought. Every description you have about you exists only in your head as a thought. Where is the truth in anything? You're a wife. Now you have so many pillars about wife. Big fat pillar, I'm a wife. What is the truth of wife?
Yet, but the path of break, like, when there is this moment where it comes to like the breaking of that, you feel the resistance, and that resistance is almost feeling like inevitable.
Yes. And yet, when we are in this kind of surrounding, you can see the resistance, let it come up and let it go. It's not that it won't come up. For all of us, anytime some resistance can show up, even if for the moment it will show up. But, yeah, it can be there. So resistance showing up is not an issue at all. That's a blessing. That is showing up here is beautiful. But the wall, the closed part of us, you know, it perceives attack. Beautiful to recognize that there are stories in this moment, it's not true. There is no danger here. There is no threat here. So there is nothing to fear, you know. And yet everyone will project their authority issues on it. It is not a problem. Let it come, but clean them, don't keep them as true. Problem is people believe what they project on them. Good luck with that, then you're stuck. Every ego is defending itself against truth. It has nothing to do with me. But the ego feels that somehow it can keep me at a distance or fight with me or prove me wrong, then it is safe. No? ये बंदा ही गलत है इसकी बात पे क्या मानने का अभी कहने दे सो डिसक्रेडिट द टीचर डिसक्रेडिट द टीचिंग नाउ यू गो सेफ हा हा यू प्रूव इट इट्स ऑल बकवास नाउ आई कैन गो बैक टू माय ड्रिंकिंग स्मोकिंग हैप्पी लाइफस्टाइल
लाइक वी आर थिंकिंग द प्रोटेक्शन विल गो
या
बट व्हेन यू रिलीज दैट यू फील योर सेफ
You realize you didn't need protection.
Yes.
You were protecting nothing. There was nothing to protect, nothing to fight with. you cannot, if you want to escape from the divine, you have to attack and defend. If attack, defend stops, there is no escape. You have to join them. So even with the teacher, people play this attack defense in their mind. The attack defense is an attack defense against God. It's a protection from God. It is a means to manage that separation, you know, like baap bete ke bich mein hota hai, the boss or colleague ke bich mein hota hai. As long as you attack your boss, you're always going to have the sense of conflict, conflict, separation, he is different, I am different. Then what we are feeling is love. What we are seeking is the love. The love is revealed when attack defense is given up. The beauty of this attack defense is the brilliant justification of it. How we can prove it to ourselves and others that my defense here is justified. My attack here is justified. It is always insane. If it can prove it, it feels no, it is not insane. It's justified. We are so identified with our thought. It's almost like that is me only. And if somebody attacks my thought, it means it's attacking me. I am so attached and identified with my thought. If somebody pokes the thought, he's poking me. But poking you and poking your thought cannot be the same thing. It is impossible. You are the awareness. You can't be poked. You can't be attacked. And a thought anyway is what is it? It's not even an object which can be attacked. So even a thought can't be attacked. Even you can't be attacked. So the whole concept of attack is imaginary. It's a desired experience. I want to perceive attack, so that I can stay in my shell and counter attack. Right? So perception of attack or threat is very valuable. If you want to hold your position, you have to perceive threat. Even if it's not there. Because to open fully, that would be love. But as long as one is perceiving threat at any level, one is justified in shutting the doors. If Christ says that love is your nature, that means it's always with you, with or without this other body. We believe, we endow things with magical qualities. That when this thing is there, suddenly my love is there. My love suddenly appears. And when this thing is not there, my love disappears. So Jesus says that is nonsense and magic. That is magic. Magic means you've given absolutely insane attributes to something. And now that is more powerful than the Son of God. Means my true nature is revealed after a drink. And you don't give me the drink, no true nature. That's called magic. Or I need a husband in order to feel safe. Now safety is also your true nature. The spirit in you is never unsafe.
There I've given magical attributes and I seek for safety, security, I seek for...
And you never find the safety.
Yeah.
Because that object which you are using for safety is always shaking. And it might run away anytime.
It's a fury
reference. Ego ke sare solution bakwas hote hain. They are never real solutions. They are Chinese solutions. Liable to break anytime. चाइनीज माल है मगर अपने हाथ में तो है ना हाँ कोई दूसरा पता नहीं किधर है
टैंजिबल
चाइनीज आईफोन है तो सही नहीं, चाइनीज है तो आईफोन है ना मेरे पास आईफोन
There's a whole. Like, I would not just say it's just the husband here. There's a whole list of things that I feel dependable on to feel that space of love. Yes. As you say, it starts with husband. It starts with my body, my sister, or my.
It means the presence of God is dependent on conditions. That's the belief. God is present only if certain conditions are matched. Which means that He can't be omnipresent. Right? Omnipresent means everywhere all the time. But we said, no. Only when this thing is there and I'm sitting in my house with my agarbatti and my husband and all, then God is there. But that's a serious limitation. It's a serious judgment on God. That God seems to appear and disappear. But where would He appear and how would He disappear? Where does He go when He disappears? Is He going to hide somewhere?
Just lost the remembrance.
You want to forget. That's why we set up these conditions. It's a clever thing, eh? That we'll remember you only after we light the lamp and all for a little while we'll remember you, then we'll forget you, okay? You vanish. Then we'll pretend to be lost again in the world. What if that's also our creation? That's our doing. We want to justifiably forget the divine. Is that exactly what you want?
Yeah, so the presence of God is expected to be found only from certain special areas of my life.
Yes.
And I believe it cannot be sought from everything and everyone.
Why do you even believe it has to be sought? To seek something means it is not already there. Right? So the concept of it has to be sought, that is also a deception. I'll be clever. I will seek something which is already there and waste time there in seeking. It's like me asking, where is Sharon? And you say, wait, I'll go and seek and I'll tell you after a while. How will you go and seek Sharon now? Tell me, which direction will you move in to find Sharon? Every direction you move will be a deception, right? You can go and walk for 1 mile east, 1 mile west. What sense does that make?
Everything became a distraction. Just so that I don't.
Everything is lack of willingness to be who you are. Whatever. Denial strategies, distraction strategy, clever escapes and detours. And the final ones are so subtle, the escapes, they are all in the name of spirituality. I'm a seeker here, I'm seeking about it. But seeking may be ajeeb ajeeb jagah pe jaake ajeeb ajeeb cheez karenge.
I have everything, I'm seeking like a man.
So then, what we are doing is just learning to give up the denials.
Yeah.
We are learning to give up the distractions. We are learning to stop fooling ourselves. That's all. Jo hum khoj rahe hain already hai. What we are seeking is already here. We are just removing all this fear of seeing it. I am already that which I am searching for. But some part of me is saying, let's deny it. Let's escape from it. Let's cleverly run away from it. Those denials are what we are moving on. Yeah? That shouldn't be so hard. These denials we've been doing for so long that they become subtle, crazy deception. Stop denying who you are. To do the clearing, we have to accept that lie as true. You have to temporarily believe that that is true. You have to make it true, then you have to find the causes in past life, childhood, right?
Mm.
But you have to buy into that statement as true, and then go into all its causes.
Mm.
Okay. But sometimes, we are in a space where it can just be dropped. It may not be possible all the time. But sometimes the space is present where that the process is already happening in the space itself. The space is dissolving everything. So whatever you are ready to leave will be left. Because this healing is happening at a deeper level than what we do when we're tapping and chit-chatting with friends. That's a certain level at which it happens. Here it's happening at a different level where the tapping may not be needed. Are we ready to leave that? It's all that's required. Or if the mind saying, no, I will leave it after 5 rounds of processing, then that is also fine. Who would I be if I gave up my rebellion? There will be some story of I'll get exploited and blah 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 blah, you know? Mm. Huh?
Yeah.
Just give us time and they'll exploit them. So the time and energy. They will take advantage of me, rob all my money. It's a woman, like I'll be sexually exploited and blah 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 blah. So they will.
I really like that line that you said, that in some sense clearing can be done only if you make a lie into truth. There is some guessing about clearing as well.
That is the same problem with forgiveness.
I have to make that incident true in some sense.
Yes.
I have to make those people, event and situations true.
Yes.
And then I target the forgiveness.
Yes. Yes. Hence the forgiveness becomes weak.
Yeah.
It doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
Like while forgiving, we are not thinking about the story which we made real.
Mm-hmm.
So that the grievances come up.
No.
We just plainly, like, I forgive you, and we are not looking at the whole story we have made and holding on to it.
Yeah.
And saying that grievance is there, which is a side effect or a byproduct of that.
Same order. You can expand it.
And in some sense, then clearing validates your life. And then promises you like a freedom out of it. But yeah, I am not saying nahi karna chahiye. But
you will find experientially that the clearings which would take an hour would at one point in time be done in 5 minutes. Because your willingness is so high. Willingness is the main thing. So when the willingness is high, just 2 statements and it's gone. It's done. But I wouldn't make this as a rule. We do whatever is required. whatever is right in that moment. So don't try and force it to be finished in 5 minutes. It keeps you at one level and you can't dip down. Very often you fail to dip into the lower, the stillness, where the problem does not even exist. So the closer you are to the truth, in the truth the problem does not exist. Problem exists at the ego level, the mind level. If you can drop down, the thing will dissolve. So it's interesting that once in my old house somewhere, you know, I keep talking in spirit and all. So once it had given me a suggestion to practice for like 21 days, and it was just one line: take it with you into the stillness. Whatever problem you have, take it with you into the stillness. Now the funny thing is, I forgot it after a while, and Amit saw it written. It was written somewhere on my table, on the wall. It was a sticky somewhere. It was a yellow sticky because these things come and I just got it. He, after 3 years, still remembers and practices that. So yesterday he was telling me something that, oh, that thing happened and I remembered, take it into the stillness, and it worked again. So now, see the beauty of that line if you use it, that if you take the problem with you into the stillness, it will vanish. It can't exist there. It can exist only on the surface, in the ego's terrain, ego's territory. You drop down into the oneness, it vanishes. That's why joining is so big. Joining is going down there into the stillness. Joining with Christ, or using your brother to join. If you're joining and becoming one, you're entering the oneness, the problem has no space to stand. Take it with you into the stillness. When the willingness is strong, quickly we get out. There's no desire to play in the mind. There's no desire to spend hours and hours doing that what we call theory. It's interesting that when a problem appears, we decide how big it is. How big it is, how much time it will take, how many sessions it will take, oh, this is a massive problem. Yeah? Poor problem, this problem, that problem. And Jesus said there is no order of difficulty in miracles. Again, they talk about it. What do you mean there is no order of difficulty? This is a big problem because I have it from 20 years, so it's a big problem. And Jesus said there is no order of difficulty. Again, that's a kind of ordering, right? You talk about ordering the mind. So we have an ordering of problems also. Which problems are tiny? Which problems are big? So what if there is no order of difficulty in any problem? What if all problems are unreal and they are just waiting for us to declare that? That we have to be willing to make them unreal. Or see them as unreal. Your willingness is key. You as spirit, you as son of God, your willingness is...
For a long time, I never understand the word willingness. I know it by dictionary, but it's only off late that I can feel that willingness is a key. That it's only my willingness which saves me out of the situation. And my willingness as in my willingness to go back into knowing the truth, being in that space, you know, like that beautiful space,
yes.
And that willingness is the key. Otherwise, I will choose to remain in the mud.
Yes. Willingness is the key. The willingness is strong. You can drop it like a flash. It's gone. Any grievance, like that. Snap a finger is gone. Yet I wouldn't make a rule out of this. Sometimes it might take longer, and that's fine. There's no judgment in that. As long as you're moving in the right direction, it's all fine. The people also tell me this, that you will bring forgiveness on this person for like months and it's not getting done with it. So there this possibility does exist. There may be a lack of willingness.
Mm-hmm.
It may be more beneficial to hold the grievance. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. That's why, you know, like, unless you have experienced, you know, or tasted or glimpsed some amount of truth.
Yes.
That willingness is difficult to sort of, you know.
Correct. Yes. The more we taste the truth, the less we tolerate any crap. That's the perfect way to say it. The more you have tasted the truth, the less you will tolerate any crap. Even within yourself. But if you have not tasted it strongly, you will live in what I call jhelum express. You're just tolerating all kinds of nonsense within you and around you. It's not just within you. You will tolerate crap around you also. By which I mean family members, colleagues, whatever. You will tolerate all kinds of stuff. Because you still haven't really tasted the beauty of that space. And if you haven't tasted it, it is not going to be your number one priority. Then it is number one, oh boy, nothing will come in the way. You will not allow that. You know the preciousness of the diamond you have. And then protecting the diamond from all these stories and clouds, that becomes the first priority.